Welcome to That's Your Opinion.
And you're wrong.
Welcome to a very belated episode of That's Your Opinion. I think our last episode went in June?
Yes, we were coming off of celebrating, Pride's year-round, but we were in our summer Pride Fest shenanigans. So we're back.
So now it's October.
We've missed you.
Time has moved on.
Yes, it has.
Today, we're keeping our flow of doing... Actually, we're going back to our roots because our first episode ever was a review of a movie that was also a play.
Yes.
So this, today's episode, we're going to be talking about Barbie and other versions of just feminism and that sometimes things are just not made for you.
Yeah, this movie, like so many things, not for everybody. And depending on who is watching this movie, we're going to have different reactions and we're going to have different, you know, perspectives on it. So perfect content to talk about our opinions because a lot of people have opinions on this movie.
Very much so. And, you know, just in case you forgot, because it's been a minute since we've recorded, you know, our opinions are right and yours are going to be wrong. And that's okay.
It's okay.
We still love you.
We're here for you. We're here to help you cope through that. And if you're still here, you know, you're probably, it's like an exposure therapy thing. You're getting used to that. And so we love that for you.
Just get used to being a kin. Because kins don't have opinions. And if they do have opinions, they're wrong.
But you're still Knuff. So come back and listen to the more content.
So I'm sure most of everyone that's listening to this has heard of Barbie, but Mara, do you want to give like context about the movie, whatever?
Yeah, so really quick recap of the plot. So spoilers ahead. In this movie, there are two worlds. There's the real world where reality exists and humans do their thing. And then there's Barbie Land. So in Barbie Land, there are the Barbies and the Kens, and the twain shall not meet until they do, and hilarity and some nonsense ensues. So we're walked through basically those two worlds meshing together, and then what we kind of take from that is, what is it to be human? What is it to be in this binary gendered world? And what is it like without that? And the similarities, differences, kind of goes a little bit into the history of Barbie and why Barbie was created, though it's like kind of limited. It's sort of, I think, what I knew as a kid, which was pretty much nothing, just that a woman invented Barbie in the States. And a lot of people were then named Barbara in the 50s. So, and that was supposed to be the all-American woman, quote unquote. So there's lots of themes and things that we'll kind of talk through, but it sort of takes this very popular pop culture iconic thing and sort of weaves in all this stuff about gender, what is feminism, what isn't it, a lot about masculinity in this as well. And there's a lot to unpack, but that's my couple minute synopsis.
Excellent synopsis. So, just starting out, I'm curious, what did you take from this movie? Like, what were your main takeaways? Because you've seen it more than once.
I've seen it so many times.
Right, so I just saw, like, we are recording this approximately 5 minutes after I've watched Barbie for the first time, and I was already telling Miriam that, like, I think I just took very different things from this, being the person that I am, but we'll go into that in a minute, but I'm curious, from your perspective, seeing it multiple times, what did you take from this?
So this is the fourth time I've seen this. That's a hard question because I feel like what I'm sitting with right now is what I'm supposed to take from this movie and what I didn't take from it. I feel like I have some unpopular opinions about this movie, but that's within maybe a specific circle of people, white cis women. I think that if I gave this critique of certain things in the movie, which has already kind of happened, it's a little bit of an unpopular opinion because it doesn't agree with like that this is this amazing feminist pivotal movie in our culture. I don't agree. I don't see it. But also, I think part of that is I'm queer. I'm in my early 40s. I grew up with Barbie, but also like still see it as this toxic thing that's very, like, cis white, heteronormative. So what I got out of it is that movies like this, yeah, they're for certain audiences, and I think it's cool that it's inspiring to some people. Maybe some people will, you know, expand their minds a little bit about binary things and get hopeful. I mean, that's not a bad thing, but also I don't know that this was really made for me. I didn't feel very seen personally in this movie. I had like mixed feelings. It was visually amazing and it was fun, but yeah, I'm still sort of figuring it out. I've liked it a little more every time I watch it, just because I think it's enjoyable with the dancing and the visuals were done so well, but mm-hmm. I'm still sitting with the same, like, oh, I don't think I'm going to be seen as like a pro, you know, good cis feminist woman if I don't love this movie and think that there's pretty much nothing wrong with it, mm-hmm. to be honest.
Yeah, I seem to get a similar experience just listening to the feedback people have given about it, and it's like, themes. This one wasn't as discourse rich as I thought it was going to be when it came out. I thought it was going to be a lot of just mm-hmm. arguing back and forth about it, but just generally people seem to really like it, which is fine.
Yeah.
But it reminds me of like how frequently movies made for people of color or queer people or mm-hmm. anyone that's not cis, heteronormative, and white get critically panned because they're like, oh, it's unrelatable. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, for those of us that do hold those identities, all the media we've ever gotten to watch was not made for us.
Yeah.
And this also, just as a queer human, this wasn't made for me. Mm-hmm. This was very specifically coming from the cis heteronormative stance of, and the cis heteronormative experience of the patriarchy.
Yeah.
It's like, as we were watching it, I was having such strong reactions to whatever storyline they were trying to make with the Kins. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we'll come back to that in a second. But yeah, I'm leaving it with this was probably really important for some people that they needed to see this. Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned the point about America Ferrera's speech yeah. about the cognitive distance of being a woman, which that's amazing. Like, I think that's a really cool way to point that out, have people interact with it.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, you were saying that really resonated with you.
Yeah. Just that you're just never enough and you have to like pretzel yourself to try to be something. And I think that not just folks that are maybe identify as cis women can relate to that. I think a lot of us can because we're trying to fit into some box or some trope, you know, that people have for us. And I think that can be very exhausting and painful. And you might need to pretzel in multiple ways with differing identities. And I still felt as a fat, queer person of color that's white presenting that like there were just limits to some of those things that I could relate to. So that part did really hit me and I felt like, oh, that was important. And I'm really glad that people heard that. And I think that's going to really resonate with some folks and put into words something that maybe had a lot of emotion that people couldn't put into words. I thought that was very strong. But then, yeah, there were other things that just I felt like were missing or I wish had looked a little different, which I'm sure a lot of people do. It's just, like you said, I think that's a great point. Like, where is the critique or the deeper dialogue? I kind of wish that folks had deeper dialogue or sort of shared some of their thoughts more on it. Besides, it was amazing. It's like a feminist manifesto. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. Like, why though? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not actually hearing like much about it. Except for like, oh, it was bold. And you know, like things like that speech were strong, but also that was one moment in the movie. And most of the movie was not that note of that note and that vibe.
Yeah, the thing for me is like, I don't think I have feelings strong enough about it to even say I dislike it. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I like when we wrapped it up, I was like, well, that happened.
Yeah, that was a movie.
I watched a movie. A movie was watched. Yeah, it's fine. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a key point that I keep running back to, and I guess my opening theme that I would like to discuss about this is I am uncomfortable with how they chose to handle the Kins.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about what, I know generally what you were saying, like, while we were watching it that made you uncomfortable, but was it, like, the whole thing with the Kens, just how they dealt with the Kens in general, or?
Yeah, pretty much all of it. Like, I thought, I kept waiting for a moment to be like, ah, I understand now. I feel okay with this. Hmm. Never got there. Never arrived at that point. So for those that have not seen Barbie yet, or won't see Barbie, as we all know, it's always been Barbie and Ken. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, Ken does not exist outside of Barbie.
Yeah.
And they make that pretty clear in the movie. And Ken, who's played by Ryan Gosling, so that particular Ken, has a crush on stereotypical Barbie, who's played by Margot Robbie. And I'm just going to call them Ryan and Margot from now on, because it gets very confusing otherwise, because every male in the movie is Ken. And you just kind of see how they just only live to exist in the context of their Barbie. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, Ken goes to the real world and notices that patriarchy exists, except he thinks it's about horses.
So he gets really excited.
Very excited. So he decides that he's going to go back to Barbie world and bring patriarchy. But what it actually seems like is that he got tired of being invisible in Barbie world. Like, to the point where the president is a Barbie, the Supreme Court is 11 Barbies, not a single Ken.
Yeah.
And then they seem to be doing votes and things, but none of the Kens are ever invited.
Yes.
So they don't even have the ability to vote. We don't know where they live.
They just roam the streets, I swear. They just roam the streets. There's no Ken houses. There's the Barbies have their houses, but we never actually see the Kens in a home.
Yeah.
In most of the movie.
And the Barbies have jobs.
Right.
So, like, President Barbie, Physicist Barbie, Dr. Barbie.
Yeah.
Ken's job is beach.
Yeah. Not even lifeguard, which is, like, I'm usually mistaken for lifeguard, but my job is actually beach. Just to, like, be on the beach and do beach things, which include just existing.
Just standing here and looking attractive. Here.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I get it, but that's a flip on the common stereotype of women are supposed to just stand there and exist.
Yeah.
And be pretty and exist. But, okay, so the part I take issue with is when they go back to Barbie world and they start, you know, talking about patriarchy apparently or whatever, the message is not that patriarchy itself is poisonous. It's that the Kens are brainwashing the Barbies.
Mm-hmm.
But the tricky part about it is that what you're actually seeing happen is inclusion. All the Barbies and the Kens are actually interacting together now. Like, there's a part at the beginning of the movie where Ken wants to spend the night at Barbie's house. Well, Ryan wants to spend the night at Margot's house. And she's like, oh, sorry, it's girls' night. You can't. So later on, Ken is kind of, well, Ryan Gosling is being a little shady. And it's like, sorry, it's boys' night. You can't stay.
Yeah.
But then in the background, all the Barbies and Kens are having a party.
Yeah.
So it's all inclusive now. Everyone's included. Everyone gets a voice. Everyone gets a say. And all the Barbies are saying, like, oh my God, I love this so much better, whatever. It's a messy message.
It is.
I get what they're trying to say. It doesn't read well because it actually makes the Barbies look selfish.
And I think what they were trying to do was sort of say, oh, look, this is now a reflection of the reality, the real world with humans interacting and, like, these two worlds merging. Oh, look, this is a reflection of what it's like. They're both, you know, the patriarchy's interacting. And so this is, I think, like, one of those, the bigger, like, feminist message in it, you know, was what they were kind of going for is, like, look, like, you either are invisible or sort of ostracized or you're brainwashed. Like, there's only two ways to be a woman. And, oh, look, they're brainwashed and we need to save them by, like, helping them realize that they're brainwashed and that they have their own voice and their own personhood and they're not just there to serve a man. Yeah.
Right. Which I feel like just could have been easily solved by having the Kens have equal power in the beginning so that when Ken Ryan Gosling goes into the real world and then experiences a world where there is no equality, men are just always in charge.
Yeah.
Then when he goes back to Barbie world and ruins the equality.
True.
Puts the Kens in charge. Now we understand that, like, oh, this is bad. But what we really saw happen was Ken goes to the real world, feels like a person, comes back, and is like, equality. And then it's bad. And the ending is just the Kens go back to being nothing.
Yeah. But also, I feel like, I appreciate your controversial opinion. Why is it controversial? Because there are going to be women that say, who cares? I don't care that this person felt invisible. Do you know how invisible women feel or other people feel? Like, who cares? No, like, they always were. I think, I think a lot of people that saw this movie felt really good with those moments where she's like, it's girls' night every night. Bye. Like, I don't need you. It's like, yeah, no, we don't need you. We can do our thing. And also, you know, I think one thing that to me was messy that's related to what you're saying is it makes it seem sort of like trying to come for some of these things that are very the gender stereotypes and then reinforcing gender stereotypes that women only want to be with a man one way.
Right.
And they want everything to be owned by them, bought by them, purchased by them. Like, they don't need a man. Or, you know, yeah, it's just like one note, you know? And so you and I were talking about that as we were watching the movie, that there's all kinds of ways to be in a relationship. And if we're just even limiting it to heteronormative cis couples, for example, that are portrayed in this movie, that focuses on, there's lots of ways to do that. So it's basically saying women are like this and think this way. And I think people who agreed with that, that watched the movie, were like, yeah.
Yeah. That women are monolithic and there's one, one way to be a feminist woman.
Yeah.
Like the part where the physicist Barbie realizes she's wearing a maid's outfit and she's like, oh my God, what am I wearing? I would never wear this. Like, totally, 100%. But then Margot Robbie Barbie says, yes, because you're a physicist. I'm like, no.
Yep.
Not because you're a physicist. Because you, as an individual woman, does not want to wear this.
Yeah. It's like, you're a physicist. Do you want pants? Like, yes. Yes, please.
Why do physicists have to wear pants? Like,
that doesn't... whatever you want.
There's no way to be a physicist. If you want to wear a maid's outfit and do physics, do that. It reminds me of Bryce Eilenberg. He is a pit stop guy on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, right.
He's redheaded, and he is on. He's been on there for a couple seasons, and his entire job on RuPaul's Drag Race is just to be hot and walk around in underwear. He literally works for NASA. He's literally a rocket scientist when he is not on RuPaul's Drag Race walking around in underwear. Like,
yeah,
you can be both.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, like, that's the thing about the Kens that gets to me, and with, like, the part about, oh, they all been brainwashed. It's like, okay, but now you're setting up a new binary of either you're feminist in a way that we want you to be feminist, or you're brainwashed.
Yeah.
Which feels awful.
It's not great. It's like, oh, you know, feminist, quote unquote, like we, yeah, one kind of feminist, thinks that, you know, we worked so hard to, like, get into some pants. Like, we were told we had to wear dresses and skirts and they had to be this length. And, oh, yeah, why wouldn't you just want to wear pants all the time? You can also wear all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And also, this is very culturally, like, of the U.S. There are a lot of cultures where some of these things are just not a thing or, like, make no sense. And so I think also I'm curious what people watching this movie elsewhere think about it and how controversial or not it is. Because I was talking to my mom about this with, oh, like, I wonder in this country, no wonder it was banned, you know, just because some of these things that I feel like, I don't know, it's just interesting. I'm getting the message here in the States of, like, this was a good feminist move, but wasn't feminist enough and should have gone harder. And then the opposite, depending on where folks are watching this.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm choosing to examine it through a queer theory lens, which is not the point of the movie. And it's not what the director Greta Gerwig meant
right
for this to be examined through. But if I'm examining it through a queer lens, right, queer theory indicates that we all have to find our own ways to be in space. We have to find our own versions of ourselves that we want to show, experience, and whatever. And you see that kinda through Margot Robbie Barbie. Of in the end, she just gives up being a Barbie because she's seen too much. And then she becomes a human. Which, again, leaves her kin just kind of doing something. We don't know what he does. We have no idea how he resolves. He's just there. And it reminds me of the issue we had with Bros around, like, vital characters get no resolution.
Yeah. I think we're supposed to assume, oh my gosh, existential crisis averted. Ken's gonna be fine. Ken's gonna find himself and have his own identity and just be okay. Like, maybe Ken will be single forever. Probably. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But again, kind of ends a little bit the way it started of like, yeah, we don't need to account for Ken. Or even like what Will Ferrell's character said. It's like, Ken's like a non-person. Like, we're not thinking about Ken. Like, yeah, I know the Ken you're talking about. And like, it's whatever. We're not concerned.
We don't worry about Ken. Ever. Mm-hmm. And like, this, what sticks out to me, and probably because I just watched it, was they were talking, like, President Barbie, played by Issa Rae, love, amazing, is saying that they don't want to go back to the way it was previously, right? Mm-hmm. That they want the Kens to not feel so ostracized and whatever. Mm-hmm. So a different Ken, who we also don't know what each Ken is supposed to be. They're just Ken. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Ken, played by Simu Liu, he says, oh, well, could we have like one, or was it Ken played by Nkudi? Might have been Ken played by Nkudi.
I thought it was Liu, I believe.
But one of them says, well, could we have a Ken on the Supreme Court? And President Barbie says, oh, no, definitely not. But we could have one on the lower courts. And they're like, we'll take it. I'm like, again, what is the message here? What is...
I think the movie's trying to flip it. Oh, look at what women have had to deal with. Settling and working their way up to quote unquote shatter the glass ceiling, all those things, those like phrases that I grew up with. This is what, if we could, you know, impart onto men what that is like, this is what it would look like.
Yeah, except it's fake. It's heavily emphasized that Barbie Land is not real.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be the thing that women aspire to. That this is the idea, this is the ideal version of what the world should be. Mm-hmm. And what this movie is saying is that the ideal version of the world for women is for men to literally not exist and to have no power and also to be no people. Which for some women, that is probably true.
Yeah.
For some people, that is probably true.
Well, is there some satisfaction and vengeance in that for some people? Definitely. I feel like that's part of it, is a bit of a fantasy of like, look at that, like, how would that feel? You know, and I was wondering, I mentioned this to you as the movie was wrapping up, I wonder how in like a het cis partnership, like going to the movies together for a date night, how does the husband or the boyfriend or the partner, how do they feel coming out of this? It's just interesting. I wonder what those conversations were like. I have a feeling though that a lot of times it's someone saying, oh my God, that was so great. And then like, yeah. And then they sort of leave it at that. Because that's kind of the vibe of what has been coming out of this movie. Like, you love it or you don't really have too many comments about it. Mm-hmm. And there are several women that have approached me that said it's amazing. And very few that have said, like, I have concerns and questions and actually like didn't think it was for me, but I'm not going to say that to anyone else. Let's talk privately later. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay.
Yeah, and I think that's like the shining example of this was made for a certain group. I can imagine, you know, people that are in more straight, cis, whatever relationships. I could see this striking so many good conversations for them.
Yeah.
Just so many good conversations, because maybe the man in the relationship is feeling very uncomfortable with how men were presented, and maybe that opens a door for, you know, the woman to be like, so that's how I feel. Generally, that's my existence.
Yeah.
And maybe that opens up conversations of like, wow, okay, that's an experience I've never had to sit with. And that's going, maybe that produces some empathy in those situations.
Yeah.
In the future of, you know, him being like, you know, that brief amount of time I had to sit through that entire movie and just feel like I was not being seen and that no one's taking my perspective into account.
Yeah.
That is a reality for a lot of women in our world.
Yeah.
So, like, again, I think that's why I can't say I don't like this movie. It wasn't mm-hmm. made for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like... it might sound strange, but I feel like it was... there's an assumption it was made for me, but I still don't feel like it was. Which makes me feel weird. Like, yeah, I'm supposed to feel a certain way about it, and I don't. But I was telling you a little earlier, I think part of it is just the way I was raised, like, half of the first half of my life before I was out to myself and then actively, like, engaging in my own queer community. I was very much, like, growing up with Barbies and steeped in heteronormativity and, you know, a couple looks one way and they're monogamous and, you know, so yeah, it's almost like it was supposed to strike more chords with me, but it couldn't. Because of my queerness and just general different take that is sometimes unpopular on, like, what I actually see as feminism, because I've had a lot of thought about that, especially over the past 2 years, of what is it to be a feminist and what is that for me and what do I even think about it? So it's been thought-provoking for me. I've enjoyed that part of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess I would mm-hmm. argue that as someone that identifies as queer, speaking towards you, this wasn't made for you. Mm-hmm. You were not in anyone's mind during this, as evidenced mm-hmm. by there are zero queer characters in this. I know. There is no queer theory active.
That's true.
In this, and even where there could have been chances to have a queer theory in there, because I think Alan was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Some sort of the queer voice of this character that's not quite woman enough to be a Barbie, but not quite man enough to be a Ken. But that doesn't go anywhere. That's just there.
And that made me uncomfortable. That I think was a very painful kind of invisibility of, like, Alan's like saying things like, I fit Clint's clothes. I'm a person. I do things. And people are like, what does even Alan do? Well, I mean, Alan's just Alan. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. Just a different kind of spin on some of the other things we've been talking about, like with the Kens and just, yeah, being a person or not. I really like Alan.
Yeah, I think Alan's great. Alan's so cute. I would love to know more about Alan.
Like, what's going on? What's happening with Alan? Also, can we go to brunch? Can we, like, hang out? Like, you also kick butt. Like,
yeah, like, you are great at fighting. So yes. Awesome.
Let's go hang out together. You can protect me and kick butt if we get into trouble.
Many questions about Alan. And I, you know, it's one of those things where it kind of once again reminds me that queer identities are still the minority.
Yeah.
In the world, and things that target more populous, maybe mm-hmm. that's the right word just to use there.
Yeah.
Identities are going to perform better.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And it does make me curious. Have you seen any movies recently or in the past or whatever that did feel like this was made for me? This is what I'm seeing myself in a movie.
I'm honestly coming up short on movies, but I think, like, there have been some shows over the year. I really enjoyed Sense8. I think that there have been some TV shows that have come out that are really cool. I think when you say, like, that you feel seen in, I think the piece that comes up for me that's the most difficult is, and there's some progress being made, but very slowly, is just larger bodies, bigger bodied people being in shows, especially when we talk about, like, queer culture and just queer shows, movies. I feel like I couldn't help but focus on that. And it was actually distracting when I watched the Barbie movie. I'm like, oh, someone that's my size or bigger in this movie, there's one of them. Mm-hmm. Okay, so is this some token thing? We're putting one person that's this, one person that's that, right? Like, we're trying to hit all of this and, like, make it more diverse. I feel like that's always been lacking. But as far as queer identity and that, I feel like there have been some good shows. But Sense8's the first one that comes to mind. I really loved that show.
Sense8 was really good. Mm-hmm. I did like Sense8. There was some fun drama about the, like, actors in Sense8, which was really, really interesting.
Oh, you'll have to give me the deets later.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me think of, like, actually, I felt very witnessed in terms of movies around Moonlight, which is a very specific Black queer, just person of color experience there. Yeah. So it really seemed like it dealt with like kind of the trickery of maybe knowing you have an identity, but just knowing that your community is just not interested in supporting that. I will say, I think the show that I felt the most seen by of any show ever was Pose. Oh, God, I loved Pose.
Yes.
Just the focus on just person of color excellence in that show.
That's so good.
Queer community, pointing out like the links the queer community goes to care for itself. And Pose is one of those shows where, like, as much as I love it and as much as I've seen the episode multiple times, and I can quote endlessly things from Mother Electra, I know many people that have never seen Pose and will never see Pose because it's not made for them.
That's true.
So they don't have a way to connect to it in that way to really understand it. And it's one of those things I find frustrating about people that hold majority identities of you have the luxury to just not watch things because it's not relevant to you. But if people of queer status choose to do the same thing, we just don't watch TV or movies or anything.
Exactly.
Because very rarely are things written for us. And if it is written for us, a lot of times it's a joke or it's tragic. Like,
that's true.
I cannot watch Call Me By Your Name because, one, it's tragic, and two, it's gross. Which is a controversial opinion. I will hold that. A lot of people love Call Me By Your Name and Timothée Chalamet and his whateverness. But they made changes between the book and the movie that I will never understand why they need to do that. And therefore, I refuse to watch it.
That's definitely fair. And I think you're right. Like, what people engage with or not. And I think it's like, why? I feel like this would be a better world and we would understand each other so much more if we were more open with that. You know, a show also that came to mind that I wish was more for me. And I think in some ways, because it was about younger queer folk, it resonated a little bit in my early 20s. The L Word. However, it still didn't quite get there because it was still very like stereotypical, very heavy on the tropes of different types of people dating and what their relationships were like. But I did enjoy the drama of that show, and I thought it was a big deal that there was an L Word. And I remember going to like an L Word convention and meeting some of the actors. And I was like, this is so cool. So that was Gaby me, you know, that was the excitement. That was sort of like, I guess, an earlier Sense8. I think that Sense8 was just had more depth and was more diverse and kind of went a little further and was just also visually stunning. But yeah, L Word. I kind of wish that show could just be relaunched and revamped and made even better because I think some of the ideas around it are cool to just have sort of like, you know, the sitcoms that are like heteronormative that people grew up with that I never resonated with, like Friends, where it's still centered around dating and just people like living in the city together and the drama and the funniness. But I just never got that show. And everyone's like, Friends, it's amazing. And I'm like, yeah, no, just like you're saying, I'm like, this was not for me. Like I tried to watch it as an adult, like went through, kind of forced myself to watch it. And I'm like, oh, I missed this iconic thing. Cause I was like growing up overseas, I need to watch it. And then I was like, I still don't like this. I still feel like this is a weird show and I don't get why people think this is so great.
Yeah, I mean, like it's Friends, it's How I Met Your Mother, it's Frasier, it's like it's all that stuff that's just like Frasier. But when for me as a kid, what I was watching was Moesha, and Sister and the Parkers, and that was the time when a lot of our TV was extremely racially divided. White people watched this, Black people watched that, and we didn't cross pollinate, and that was kind of what it was. And now that we're kind of in this new world where like things are supposed to appeal to more people, it's there still is a pretty strong heteronormative gaze to it. Like I actually rage quit watching the new Batman movie because it's very heavily implied that Catwoman and Poison Ivy are a thing, and at some point for some reason, and I can think of no other reason than just heteronormativity, Catwoman like starts making out with Batman, and okay. I'm like, I wait, what? I don't.
Why? It's like, because it's a Batman movie. Her
entire motivation is that she wants her girlfriend back. What is happening?
But, Marquez, she can't resist Batman. It's Batman.
I was like, okay.
It's like, oh, yeah, you just gotta... Yeah, it reminds me of, like, for some reason, I'm jumping to James Bond. Those mm-hmm. are the kinds of movies, too, where it's just like, there's always, like, he always gets the girl, you know, kind of thing. And they just, like, can't help but make out. I'm like, okay, like, this is also, like, now this is a 3-hour movie and we could just skip through this. Mm-hmm. It's very predictable.
I've never watched a movie where there was a sex scene and I was like, I needed that. I needed that for the plot. I needed that to really emphasize that they like each other, they love each other. Yeah. That was a vital part to me. I never, never in my life.
It all makes sense now.
Like it clicks. I understand. Never. I don't need it.
They think each other are attractive and they're into each other.
And I was not sure until this moment. Mm-hmm.
I'm really mm-hmm. glad they highlighted that for me. I wasn't quite sure.
I was following, but not that close.
Meanwhile, mm-hmm. now I'm getting spicy with this. You have a queer couple kiss, start to have sex, cuts to the next scene. Or you might get a kiss in, and then if they even kiss, maybe they're just getting close to each other, and then it's like off to like another scene.
I'm
like,
just look at eyes.
I used to notice that, and that would piss me off when I was younger. I'm like, what? When will I ever see this normalized mm-hmm. for anyone that's not a straight couple?
Or if you do see it, it's in the context of cheating.
Uh huh.
Or it's this really weird secret,
thing, right,
going on. Just like, oh. My husband disappears on Tuesdays at this time and can't cut to him getting just completely wrecked by a random dude. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, it's so gross, whatever. Like, it's very rare. You could just see that in, like, a true romantic, loving, connected way. And it just reinforces in society that queerness is something to be hidden
mm-hmm.
and quiet and shameful. Mm. And, you know, I give credit to a lot of shows like, you know, Queer Eye, both mm-hmm. the old version and the new one, mm-hmm. RuPaul's Drag Race, Sense8, Moonlight, you know, even Call Me By Your Name, as much as I dislike it. you know, I give credit to these shows because they show relationships
mm-hmm.
that aren't toxic
yep.
and bad or revengeful or things like that. It's also I frequently find in YA, you know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. they're more likely to have queer characters that are healthy than adults. Like, Teen Wolf had some really cute queer couples in it. There's a new show called, it's not a new show, but it's kind of based off of the Vampire Diaries.
Mm-hmm.
Legendary? Something like, I don't remember the name. But anyway, they have some cute queer couples in it, and it's kind of like, I feel like YA is kind of leading the charge in this world around that. And I think that's great. I'm really happy that we're kind of starting to push there. I'm also kind of hoping that as we go further, people do take the risk, like you were saying earlier. Like, mm-hmm. just watch something
mm-hmm.
that maybe doesn't immediately speak to you
mm-hmm.
or doesn't seem to immediately connect to any of your identities, give it a try because that's not a privilege everybody has. And maybe you might learn something.
I don't think we're going to be anything but better for it, you know, because growing up, I was exposed to so many different shows and things. And actually, you and I, you're talking about Moesha and these other shows. I grew up watching all those shows and I really enjoyed a lot of just that world. And I think I'm better for it. You know, I think I just have a different perspective on things and just made me from a young age, like more open to a lot of things. And so I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think we can get very like stuck and siloed in what we do and what we consume. And you and I have had this conversation so many times just about what we choose to sort of put our energy into and our attention. And I think that pop culture and movies, TV shows, like is something that we interact with all the time as people. So mm-hmm. you know, what choices are we making and why? And why are we watching this show for the millionth time? Is it actually something where we feel seen? Or is it just like, oh, they're actually like, this show makes me feel kind of bad about myself because I see nothing of myself in this show. Mm-hmm. And it's actually toxic. Or, oh, it's different and it's expanding my mind and my perspective. Let's watch it again. Mm-hmm. Like, just a little bit of thought into that. But you mentioned, was it Legend? You were trying to think of that show or movie.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
It made me think of Legendary.
Yeah, Legendary. Great show.
That, even though it wasn't like a direct connection to me, I did feel seen in that because I love the artistry. I love the dance. I love the creativity in the show. And spending my early 20s dancing in a club like a maniac from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. most nights of the week, I absolutely love that show so much. And that was such a fun thing to watch that with you. We watched it from beginning to end. And it just blew me away every time. And I just thought, this is so cool. Like, whoever is watching this out there, maybe they're going to get into ballroom. Maybe they're going to join a house. Maybe they're going to do something totally different, but they're just inspired by this. And I think that we need more of those celebrations of artistry, mm-hmm. In that way that isn't necessarily, oh, you're a good actor, you know? I think mm-hmm. that there's a lot of types of creativity in artistry, and I'm trying to also think about that in my own life and just embrace that. And I think shows like Legendary help us with that.
Mm-hmm. So the show is called Legacies, in case you want to watch it mm-hmm. and you care about the Vampire Diaries.
I need to watch that.
But we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and surprise. We're actually going to do an entirely different topic. We're going to talk about Lizzo.
Okay.
And give some, some thoughts about what we think is going on in the Lizzo sphere. Mm-hmm. So go get yourself a snacky, and we'll be right back.
See you soon.
And we're back.
Bonjour.
So we decided to just, you know, make a two-part episode because it's our podcast and not yours.
And we do what we want.
Whatever and ever and as an ours. Okay, so we're going to talk about Lizzo.
Hey, caramba. Yeah. Yeah.
So for those that are not aware, there has been drama with our dear queen, Lizzo.
I know. Makes me so sad.
So, allegations have come out recently. I think it was more, like, I think they started coming out, like, around the beginning of August. That was mm-hmm. that was when I was in Ireland.
You were in Ireland, and I couldn't talk to you about this for a whole 10 days, and I was very upset.
Yes.
You were busy.
And the Irish didn't care, so I had no one to talk to about this.
No.
But anyway, so allegations came out that apparently Lizzo was forcing backup singers in like her touring group to go to strip clubs and participate, but also had someone else in her group that was proselytizing, basically evangelizing mm-hmm. the entire time. Also allegations of fat shaming and mm-hmm. ableism mm-hmm. Going on there, which for anyone that knows who Lizzo is, and I'm assuming most people, if you're listening to this podcast, you know who Lizzo is. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's one of those like, wow, that's really distressing if that ends up all being true. That
very distressing.
It's very against the public image of Lizzo.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, the allegations are kind of like this sort of three-prong. There's the, I believe it's the person that heads up the choreography, Lizzo herself, and then like the broader company. So a lot of pieces to that have evolved over time. But we're not going to get into all the details on that, but how does this connect to the Barbie movie? Basically, how people reacted to this the millisecond it came out is what Marquez and I have been talking about and having reactions to. And maybe if this was someone else, there wouldn't have been the same reactions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's attached to kind of an understanding of feminism, but also that Lizzo represents things mm-hmm. that historically people just don't like.
Yeah.
Like, she's fat, she's black, mm-hmm. she's outspoken, she's sex positive, she's body mm-hmm. positive, she's health at every size.
Mm-hmm.
She's very vocal about the treatment that she receives mm-hmm. as a black woman in the industry, and made worse by being a fat black woman in the industry. And there's always been an undercurrent
mm-hmm.
around her of her fans are ravenous, but the people that don't like her really don't like her.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are lots of people who are out there that don't want certain people to succeed, and she can be included in one of them, right? Because of just who she is, mm-hmm. you know, just existing herself, much less as an artist, mm-hmm. much less as someone that became very famous. Mm-hmm. So I think what's been disturbing to me as this has come out is just the, you know, the allegations aside, so we don't know what happened, you know, either direction, if it did or didn't. Just the really nasty things I've been seeing on TikTok, social media, videos of her, like, being injured or, like, making fun of her, just, you know, like, graphic things that are really horrible. And, you know, it just gives me pause. Like, would you be making this if it wasn't Lizzo? Probably not. Like, I don't see this type of content about other people who people try to cancel or are canceled. Like, that's not a thing. So have we been waiting to put out this material, but now that this allegation came out, we're posting it every day and feeling like we have the right to do that?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is a connected part of just kind of the issues with cancel, mm-hmm. the cancel culture that we kind of are in now, of like, we don't wait mm-hmm. for evidence, or we don't wait for both sides. We don't wait for, you know, really it the thing to be adjudicated before we decide that, like, oh, yep, that was awful. And usually what it is that we agree with it because we already had a thought in the back of our head that this person is capable of this. Mm. So the rapidity of how people were just on, yep, Lizzo's crap, mm-hmm. was just like, oh, so y'all were waiting. Mm. Y'all been waiting for her to mess up something in order to jump on her and just get rid of her. Like, you are tired of seeing this fat black woman succeed, and you found it and you're on it. Now, that is all to say that I don't know if Lizzo did this. Mm-hmm. I'm reserving judgment on it because I don't know. I wasn't there. Is it something she could have done? Yes. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that also she didn't do it? Yes. So, yeah. And I think this is why this kind of annoys me, of like, cancel culture started as, you know, way before even the Me Too movement, of believe women. Mm-hmm. And then it evolved into this toxic monster of, mm. if you have an allegation about anyone, you instantly have to believe the allegation. Mm. And we've lost the nuance there.
You're not wrong. I got caught up in that too. I mean, then more came out with, like, more information later. But, I mean, I was shocked when I first heard about it, but I got sad very soon after, you know. And I know that part of it for me is, I've experienced, you know, things that weren't believed. Let's just put it that way. And it's horrible. And mm-hmm. so my default is like, oh my gosh, you know. And actually I wondered, like, because it was a woman and other women, how that may kind of switch up people's perceptions or not, and just how this would play out. But overwhelmingly, when I speak to reactions and those videos I mentioned, it's really mostly centered around that she is a bigger woman, that she, like, just really just degrading her, you know, in a way that I'm like, you had those thoughts about this person way back, mm-hmm. like, from the moment that you saw that this person existed or other people like her. So this is a lot bigger than just those allegations, you know.
Definitely.
Like, those need to be looked into, and that will... you know, I honestly don't know at all where that's at. I kind of disengaged from it because it was a bit of a rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. But this is sort of the broader topics are sort of like how maybe people at large look at this situation, how feminists, you know, react to this, and how they, what their perceptions are and what they're saying about it, and how that sort of ties to feminism in general now and what it is to be. Yeah, a feminist, and your opinions on this.
Well, like, it's escaped feminism. Mm-hmm. It's escaped what it was meant to be. Mm-hmm. And just like we've talked about in previous episodes of other things, once it leaves
that culture, world. Yeah.
It mm-hmm. it just starts, it gets tainted with mm-hmm. our dominant culture's issues. Mm-hmm. And one of our dominant culture's issues is that there always has to be a villain. Mm-hmm. Someone has to be wrong. Someone has to be right. And a lot of times, these are not as clear-cut as we want them to be.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about sexual assault. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about these issues with celebrities where they do bad things that people do. Mm-hmm. And yet we, it, and then it gives people license to just abuse them.
Right.
Like, I think it's a very different, like, I saw some, you know, there was some analysis that was kind of drawing the similarities between this Lizzo thing with the Amber Heard Johnny Depp chaos of how over time we realized that they were abusing each other and they've been abusing each other for years.
Yeah.
So really no one's good in this situation.
It's all bad.
Yeah. But people have taken up their camps in this. And there are people that said Amber Heard was called her everything but her Christian name. And then people, you know, Johnny Depp got removed from projects and all these things and whatever. And at the end, we're just looking at each other like, oh, so they both suck?
It's interesting. Okay. We usually talk about the binary in terms of gender, but like when we think of politics and taking a stance or taking a side, like that's just our culture. We are very black and white about things. And I think that, yeah, you're right. I feel like that's where debate really lives, right? To have a debate, you need to be in the gray. You need to be able to engage in a conversation about nuance. And I think that, I don't know, I feel like, controversially brave. I think it's lazy. I think it's lazy to not debate and to not have nuance. And I think some people just are like, yeah, no, this is where, how I feel about it, and I'm sticking to it, and that's it. And there's no, like, in between, and there's no conversation. And if you try to have a conversation with me, how dare you?
Which is why I think it's so insidious that, and I would go as so far to say that this is actually a function of the patriarchy to take something that we were specifically saying in terms of sexual assault and particularly violence against women. We were specifically saying we as a culture need to start listening to women and believing women when they say bad things happen to them. And then we start, and then the patriarchy starts attaching all this other nonsense that needs to be nuanced and saying, oh, so we're not using nuance anymore. We're done with that. Cancel culture. There is no more nuance. If you say something, it's true. It's like, no. You are purposely bastardizing that in order to continue hurting women.
Yeah, it's like, what is the impact? What, who gets hurt in the end? And I feel like, kind of to the Barbie movie, like, no one won. Like, there's no, like, winner. There's still all these people that are unseen and feel invisible and are treated badly, you know? It doesn't fix women being treated badly if men are treated badly. Controversial opinion to some people that were probably cringing at that comment, but like, I don't think that that is a good thing. I don't think that it's, to be honest, sometimes I get uncomfortable when just people are talking about groups in general as if they're all one thing. Like, that's not okay, but it's normalized, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it frequently has to start from that place of, we are going to make a bold statement that says, you know, like, Me Too, Black Lives Matter, care about Indigenous women. Like, we say these big things.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we're also challenging people to engage in discourse, to your point, of like, let's have conversations. But in our society, we frequently never move past the just big point.
Right.
People react to the big point. They have feelings about the big point. And then, as you know, you say a lot, we completely lose the plot somewhere along the way of... Yeah, so we were talking about something really specific that shouldn't be interrogated. And somehow we have now decided we're not going to interrogate anything ever at all.
Yeah.
How did this happen? And the answer is patriarchy. But it's like, why? Yeah.
And in the case of Lizzo, fat phobia, racism, patriarchy, like, it's just such a bad mix of so many things that just together are pretty powerful. Like, you know, these things I'm seeing online, these videos that are really harmful, there's so many of them, and they're not being taken down. They're there, and they have so many views and comments, and yeah, it's just, it's sad.
And I'm incredibly uninterested in the, like, Lizzo defense tribe or whatever. Like, I'm not doing that. I think it is interestingly connected to Barbie in terms of, there's still a correct way to be a woman. There's still a correct way to be a man. There's still a correct way to be black, be fat, to be whatever. And when you choose to not do those things, you are targeted. Mm-hmm. And to the speech that America Ferrera wrote of, they're always waiting for your downfall. Mm-hmm. And I think Lizzo is, could be a very good example of like, yeah, even if these allegations turn out to be true, mm-hmm. they were still waiting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's really what we want to get at. Like, that's really the point of why we wanted to talk about Lizzo, is those folks in our pop culture that are like those symbols, you know, of like the evidence of people are waiting, like in the wings, mm-hmm. with bated breath, to mm-hmm. with material ready, mm-hmm. to post, with things ready to say. And then they get emboldened and they say, oh, I have a reason, I can say it now. Mm-hmm. Look at this. It's like, no, that's also happening over here, but you're using that as an excuse. Mm-hmm. Actually, you don't even care about these women and the allegations. That's what's really sad.
It's that.
Like, that's messed up.
It's that. We really boil down to it for a lot of these folks. They do not care at all.
No.
About the women that are posing the allegations, mm-hmm. that Lizzo harmed them. They don't care. Mm-mm. They just wanted something that they could finally use. Yeah. To abuse Lizzo. And it's, you know, it's terrible, you know.
It's just, the whole situation's so sad. It makes me really sad. And mm-hmm. I think these icons in our culture, like, they really inspire people and they make people hopeful. So I think that's what made me sad about it, is I knew the allegations made me sad. But then separately, just what I knew was coming. And I honestly didn't know exactly how bad it would be, because I think there are just some corners of the internet that are worse. Mm-hmm. And on TikTok, it's kind of bad right now. But, you know, why was I surprised? It's like, I think I didn't want it to be the reality, because then we just stopped talking about the initial thing we were talking about. Now we're just being gross for being gross's sake, because mm-hmm. we feel like we can. It's like, this is just more bad, y'all. Like, let's take a step back and be a better human. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it does really highlight the state of things when it comes to that and just the reality. So that's part of why we have this podcast. Mm-hmm. We talk about our opinions, and we may come off really strong about it. Maybe even like, this is a right opinion or this is a wrong opinion. But there is a lot of nuance. That's how I think that it's fun to have opinions. To mm-hmm. actually have an opinion that you can stand by is like, oh no, I've been down all the rabbit holes mm-hmm. and really thought about this and questioned this. Or like, this is my opinion, it's biased, and here's why, for example. Mm-hmm. And I just want more of that in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pointing out when your positionality is clouding mm-hmm. something. When, mm-hmm. like even with Barbie, like both of us are saying, like, we're both examining it from a queer lens, and therefore... Yeah. Parts of this just isn't meant for us. Mm-hmm. Is it bad? No.
Yeah.
Is it amazing? Not to me. But probably to other people, it might be, and that's mm-hmm. fine. Your opinion can be totally wrong, and that's fine. Just stick still with love that. You.
Yeah.
We still love you. And you know, if the allegations come out to be true that Lizzo is horribly abusive, then I hope that the people mm-hmm. that need justice get justice in that situation.
100%.
And if it turns out that they're not true, then literally the exact same thing. I hope the people that are harmed get the justice that they deserve in that space.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, as you were listening today, you probably have some wrong opinions. And that's okay.
It's okay. We still love all of our listeners, and we look forward to seeing you pretty soon. Not sure what our next adventure is going to be, but Barbie's been in the zeitgeist so much lately. And then, yeah, just started talking about Lizzo separately and kind of saw the connection. So we thought we'd pop on and let you know our opinions on it. And I'm sure we'll come up with something fun for next time.
Yeah. And don't forget, you are Knuff.
I really want that hoodie.
I need it so bad.
We should, if we rewatch Barbie ever, we've got to wear the hoodies. 100%. We need matching hoodies. I feel like that would get me to watch it for like a fifth time. I've watched it so much. Mostly for the dancing. Mostly for the Ken's dancing, to be honest.
The dancing's great.
That 80s blue pink montage was, with the prancing and the leaping, was really everything for me.
It's very good.
That's what I was in it for, to mm-hmm. be honest.
So, you are Knuff. And au revoir.
Au revoir.